It's time to lean back and buckle in. This ain't your grandma's early learning podcast. Then again, your grandma probably didn't know what a podcast was. Hey, moms and dads, puppies and kittens, caregivers and advocates, it's time for Shaking Bones. Here's Dan and Amy.
Hi there. Welcome to the Shaking Bones podcast. I'm Dan Hodgins.
And I'm Amy Ahola.
And this episode is on You Can't Make Me, those power struggles. Amy and I are hanging out together to tackle the untouchables. Sometimes we might challenge your beliefs and maybe even stretch your comfort zone. But most importantly, we want to make you think. We don't expect agreement or disagreement, but what we do hope is to cause some shaken bones. Now, Amy, you can't tell me that in your program you've ever had a power struggle with a child.
Oh, my gosh, every day.
Yes. By the way, I think we even have them with adults sometimes, don't you?
Oh, all the time.
So I'm often, when people ask me what do I view as is opportunity for attaining power, I always put it in terms of wanting a sense of control. And I think power and control are often on the same plane. I can't think of anybody that's not interested in attaining some sense of power. The difference is when it's power over versus power with. Don't you think that trying to attain powers is probably a normal behavior?
Yes, definitely. And, you know, you see it with very, very young children. And so, you know, I believe it's something that's innate.
Yeah. You see it with 2-year-olds, you see it with 17-year-olds.
Yes. Looks a little bit different, but it's the same basic premise.
Right. You know, again, they're bigger bodies, but they're doing some of the same things. So I'm often wondering, when people say that they have a lot of power struggles in a program, and I think that's normal, I look at what in their program do they provide so that children can attain power. Because my experience, and of course you add to this too, my experience is the more we give children the opportunity to attain power, the less power struggles occur. Would you agree with that?
To some degree. And I think it has to do sometimes with personality, because, you know, I can think of a couple of children that I work with or have worked with in the past that we have given every opportunity that we can possibly think of. And it's still, you know, they just have such a high need for power that it's continual.
Yeah, but. And I understand that. I'm wondering if the adult comes down hard on a child, whether or not the child is going to remain peaceful or actually going to become more interested in attaining power, no matter what the personality is, because the adult has the need themselves to attain power.
I think that, you know, an adult trying to obtain power over children causes a lot of more, I guess what you would say, violent type reactions from younger children than trying to work with the power with the younger children.
Yeah. And I wonder if somebody in this field is looking, it doesn't feel comfortable with their own sense of power. My fear is, and I don't know how often it happens, but my fear is that it's a great field to try to attain power because you're dealing with young children whom you might think, well, you can have power over them until they have a toddler, and then they realize there is no such thing. because a toddler just tells you the way it is. And so therefore, people start coming down harder on children because they think that's what they need to do.
You know, I see it a lot in terms of, again, going back to, I know in previous episodes I've mentioned social media, I've seen it a lot in terms of, you know, the discipline versus the guidance for young children. And I think what you're saying has some merit to it, because I think that for some children, you know, the more that someone tries to have power over them, the more, you know, withdrawn, or the more they have outbursts, or, you know, some of the things like the hitting or the pinching or the biting, some of those things start to come out when there's that harsher discipline versus the guidance and the opportunity to, you know, work with them with their feelings and giving them choices and opportunities to have power with instead of over.
Yeah, I love it when a toddler will stand and scream up and down, you know, because they're saying to the world, you can't make me, just stop this. I don't care what you do, you know, because that's the clear message. And then the adult might begin to raise their voice at the toddler, so the toddler has to get louder. And so what it ends up being is this yelling match between the small 2-year-old and maybe a 40-year-old adult, which is very entertaining to watch, but not if you're really involved in it in terms of the process. I always remember going to the mall and watching adults chase toddlers around saying, I'm not going to chase you, as they're chasing that kid all around. And I'm thinking, I wonder who's winning in this power struggle. And in most cases, I'm going to bet on the child. But sometimes we get caught up in it as adults. We forget that children need opportunities to express their feelings and their anger and their need for power too. And so that adults forget that, and sometimes it creates more power struggles.
I do see that. And, you know, 2-year-olds are so determined. I mean, I think about all the things that I would like to do in my life. And sometimes I'm like, if I had the determination that I had when I was 2, or some of the 2-year-olds that I'm working with, I would accomplish so many more things, because when they want something, they want it. And so it's a matter of finding, you know, a common ground. And as an adult, when you want children to do something, working with them, and not giving them, not asking them. I see this a lot with pickup, with power struggle. It's like, do you want to go home? Well, asking a child if they want to go home, that's not an option. You know, they have to go home. So how can you give a child power in helping to get ready to go home? Do you want to put your jacket on, or do you want me to put the jacket on? You know, some of those types of things to really look at our language, because if we ask a child if they want to do something when it's something that has to be done, we're giving them that choice. And then there's the power struggle because of, you know, they say, no, I'm not, I don't want to go home. And so just, you know, our language makes a big difference with that.
Oh, it does. And the fact that most power struggles occur when it's led by the adult, or when you feel like you don't have any choice involved. Because even as adults, when I am more likely to get into a power struggle with another adult is when I feel that my choices have been totally removed, and then I get angry in terms of that. So I think part of it is the same thing with children. I know what we used to, when parents used to come to pick up their children, we would yell, hide, your mom's coming. And they would hide underneath the table. And then it was responsibility of the parent to try to find their child, and that gave the child some ownership, as well as, I mean, parents were struggling to get their child to go, not because they didn't like their parent, they were having a lot of good time while they were there and didn't want to give up that good time, especially they know that they're going to get into a car, have to put the seatbelt on, et cetera, which is all things we need to do with children. But when children feel like they don't have a choice, they're more likely to get us involved in power struggles. So I think part of it is definitely looking at how do we give real choices to children, so like you had indicated, so that they feel like they're involved in that process. I'm wondering if another one isn't that our expectations might be too high for some children.
I think that comes into play a lot. I know that I've used the ages and stages questionnaire a lot with parents, not when I'm worried so much about development, but when I want to show a parent that their child is at or exceeding where they should be developmentally. Because I think, again, with the pushdown and things that we're seeing, you know, there are so many more expectations of children earlier. And I know we talked about a little bit when we were talking about rites of passages, children being expected to act older or given responsibilities of what would have been for an older child, that we are placing expectations upon children much earlier than necessary. Than necessary or when it's developmentally appropriate to give them those expectations.
Right. I'm thinking of an example where I observed a child at a snack table in a program, and the child was about 3. The expectation was that the child was to put the napkin in his lap, he was to eat a snack, and at the finish of snack, he was to throw his paper products in the waste can. This was a 3-year-old, and I thought, oh, I don't know adolescents that do that very well. I'm sitting there looking to see what was going to happen, and what happened was the 3-year-old stood up after they had finished, wiped his mouth with his hand, and then walked away, and the teacher said, you forgot to put your things in the wastebasket. And so he went over, and he picked up a cup, and he threw it in the wastebasket and then left again. Well, he still had a napkin and a plate. So the teacher said, you forgot your plate. And by the second suggestion, he wasn't about to finish any more of that. So he just started screaming out loud that I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. And the teacher said, well, then you can't play anymore until you pick up. And I'm thinking, oh, this is going to be really entertaining to watch. And so how did was just throw himself on the floor and started screaming at the top of his lungs. So I went over and got the wastebasket, moved it close to the table and picked him up and said, there, it's done. Is that okay? And the teacher just kind of looked at me with that shocked look of disbelief that I would do that. I think sometimes we have to choose our battles with children.
You know, I choose my battles every day with my son.
And, you know, I keep thinking with my own daughter, you have to decide when it was worth fighting. And it doesn't mean that there aren't times as parents and teachers that we need to take stands, especially if it's related to health and safety. But you really have to take a careful look at whether or not you want to put the energy into that power struggle. Because I don't know about you, I think it takes a lot of energy.
It does take a lot of energy. And Dan, I learned an acronym a very long time ago, and it was related to group processing. But I like to put it in towards working with young children, too. And not, it doesn't just work with power struggles. It works with a lot of things. And it's WAIT. Why am I talking? And, you know, I try to remind myself a lot when different things are going on to really look at what, you know, what is my intention upon saying something or asking a child to do something, to see it, you know, if it is a health or safety concern, then it's like, okay, this is a health or safety concern. I need to, you know, I need to step in and I need to make sure that we're safe or we're, you know, we're following things that we need to do. But a lot of times I stop myself from saying or interrupting or getting involved with something that, again, picking your battles, by reminding myself to wait.
That's a good thing. Because I think sometimes if you step back, take a look, that they frequently can solve their own challenges. And it probably stays with the child a lot longer when they do that. I think the other part of it is, too, is that we really want children to gain some control over themselves. And if we're always doing it for them, if we're always reminding them when they need to do something, they really don't develop a sense of self-control because the adult's always making that choice or decision for them. People are always saying to me that the most common power struggles occur during gathering time, bathroom procedures, eating, nap time. And I can see where those are times when the adult, and I'm not saying they shouldn't, but the adult has to, in some cases, have a little more control of that decision making. But when we do that as adults, children are more likely to revoked because it, unless there's some choices within those parameters. So what I look at is how often do children really get to make some real choices?
You know, the list that you gave, I would add to that, pick up and drop off tend to be the times that we have the most, or when there's any type of transition. And I know when I worked in a different program before I had my own program, transitions were awful because there were too many transitions and children were just interrupted in what they were doing. And so that, you know, that time is also anytime there was a transition, there were power struggles all the time and you were chasing children in all kinds of different directions. So again, looking at removing as many of those types of things as possible and, you know, allowing children to be as independent as possible, as early as possible. One of the things that we did, you know, with bathroom procedures and diaper changing is we have a changing table that is only 6 inches off the floor. So the child, as soon as they're able to crawl, because we have infants as well, crawl up onto the changing table themselves and crawl off when they're done, so that it's, you know, a much more independent process and, you know, talking to the infants and letting them know what you're doing before you're going to do it. And just, you know, asking them to help in any manner that they can, you know, lifting up their legs for you. And some of those basic types of things do help a lot. And like I said,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's all right. And, you know, like I said earlier, when you have an expectation or something that needs to be done, just clearly communicating to the child that, you know, we have to do this, but you can be a part of how it's going to happen.
Right. And I think that's what I was going to say is the fact that when you give a child a choice to be part of that process, like helping yourself get up on the changing table or helping yourself get down, getting them involved in, as being part of that process really gives them a clear ownership to their life. And I think many times power struggles occur because of the lack of feeling of control that they want or need. And I think that pertains to all ages of development, because I think even as adults, we want to feel in control partly to what we do with our life and how we make that happen. I get upset sometimes when I want a particular parking spot and it's not there. So I have to figure out how to make that happen and whether or not I want to spend time just riding around the parking lot until a spot and get some, or whether or not I want to park at a further distance. But the choice is mine, and I think that's what children are looking for, is that time when they get to make some decisions. The other thing that I wonder about is the expectation of sharing sometimes causes power struggles, when you might have one item and you have more than one child who wants that. So sharing sometimes creates power struggles between children. Do you think that happens a lot?
I see it. And, you know, some of the ways that we don't, quote unquote, share, we take turns. And I think the expectation, again, like we talked about earlier, expecting very young children to share is really, okay, I'm going to take what you have and you're not done with playing and give it to someone else. And that's the understanding that they get of sharing, because that's what we do. We don't wait until the child is done when young children share. It's like, okay, you're done now. I'm deciding that you're done with this and it's going to go to this other child. So of course, when they hear the word share, they freak out, because that's not something that, you know, being as egocentric as they are, that's not something that they enjoy, having somebody else take something that they're not finished with. So we do, when we don't have enough for everyone, we take turns, and a child can have a turn for as long as they want. And oh my gosh, sometimes it's a lot of work to work with the child who's waiting for a turn to understand that sometimes children take a very long turn, but when they're done, you can have a very long turn too. And it's working with them to say, well, what do you want to do while you wait for a turn, to help them find alternative activities. And then the children get the sense of, you know, ownership, and they're, as they get older, they're more apt not to take as long of a turn if someone is waiting, because they know that they can have something as long as they want and they can have another turn later.
Yeah, and that decision to decide how long I can have something and then when I'm finished, I think it's a crucial development when it comes to figuring out life in general. I keep thinking I would hate it if I'm reading a good book and somebody come up to me and said, okay, now you have to share that book with Amy, whether I'm finished or not. I'd be pretty upset about that. Even though I like you, I'm still not going to share it until I finish with it. And yet we don't do that with adults, but we frequently impose that with children, that we think that if we divide the time up and everybody gets a turn, that creates fairness, when in reality it doesn't create fairness at all. It creates inequality because we're asking a child to do something that wasn't really decided on him or her in terms of that development. So it creates a lot of power shuffles that occur with kids. And I want it, you want it, I want it, you want it. And then sometimes people will make the decision, well, I'm going to put it away if you can't play with it together. And I keep thinking, how does that create power experiences for children? Are there certain, besides the waiting and besides the giving children the opportunity, Amy, that you give to children about how long they're going to keep it, are there other things that you do in your program to create an opportunity for children to feel that sense of power?
Well, you know, we don't, I know some places have centers and, you know, you can spend so much time here and so much time there and you move around. Just having a big block of open time where the child gets to choose who they want to play with, what they want to play with, and, you know, having everything basically available to them. In our program, there are a few limits to that because having infants through school age children, we have to be careful of things with that could be choking hazards and have to find a way to, you know, if the child or a number of children want to play with something that has small parts, we have to figure out how that's going to happen sometimes. But for the most part, having, you know, the ability to choose what, how, and with who, that makes a big difference in terms of power struggles, and allowing powerful play as well.
And so what is that? If we're looking at powerful play, are we talking about children having mastery of their body in terms of movement, or we're talking about maybe climbing high? We're perhaps talking about children being allowed to jump onto a safe surface. We're looking at children being able to make some decisions on where they're going to take something to play with, because I think sometimes we get so fragmented in where children are allowed to take things that, you know, things belong in, like you said, a house area or block area, and you don't have those. But in some cases, they're so fragmented that children can't really decide in their own sense of thought, well, I don't really view this as a house piece of equipment. I view this as a piece of equipment that's going to move with me throughout the program. And I think those kinds of things really give children the opportunity to feel more powerful when they can make those decisions.
Yes. And, you know, the movement of things, and like you were talking, and the other piece of powerful play is, you know, the superhero play that we did a whole podcast on, having, you know, the superhero and the dress up, and allowing the children to, you know, wear whatever they want to wear throughout the day. You know, if they don't want to wear their shoes or they don't want to wear their socks, you know, being able to take things off, whether we're inside or outside, as long as it's not a safety risk of where they're at, that makes a big difference too.
Yeah, I think sometimes what we need to do as adults is step back and take a look at, will the world end if I don't allow this to occur? And I think part of it is that idea that if we step back and we take a look at, frequently children can really make some good decisions regarding their own sense of safety, their own sense of how far they can take a risk. And you know, and allowing children to make those decisions frequently gives them that strong feeling of power. And what I find is children tend to be safer in their play when they can make some decisions. That doesn't mean that adults aren't responsible for making the environment safe, but I think giving children the opportunity to take some of those risk-taking behaviors like the superhero play and the other components really gives children the opportunity to really feel comfortable with themselves and others. And they're less likely to be involved in a power struggle when they know that they can make that decision.
Right. And, you know, when they're feeling powerful, there's no need to struggle because you're not, you know, again, the earlier when you talked about power over or power with, when they're feeling powerful, they don't have a need for power. So they're not going to struggle for it.
Well, we are at time already for closure for this topic. We could probably spend 3 weeks on this topic because I can imagine that lots of people have power issues. Even though you and I both agree that there are some personalities that might lend itself to involve each other in power struggles, there are some things that I think adults can look at and wait at and attend to see whether or not, if I'm having a lot of power struggles in the program, do I need to provide more power opportunities for kids? If you have questions about or continued discussion about power struggles, you can email me at dkj5075@aol.com or Amy at...
You can reach me by email at amyahola@hotmail.com or you can find me on Facebook at Child Central Station.
Thanks so much for listening.
Thank you.
This has been Shaking Bones. Dan and Amy will be back next week for more Bone Rattling. Stay tuned.